191-192 on the bottom numbers. We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines from the top. Ach is where we got up to. Which is the first paragraph in English on page 191. So we're talking about the natural love and fear versus the intellectual love and fear. And saying that a person's, of course, we've been discussing for chapters already the idea of having kavana and mitzvah strichas kavana. We're segueing now into chapter 40, 41, and etc. that talk about the importance of love of Hashem and fear of Hashem when you're doing mitzvahs. So here he's talking about the various types of love and fear as qualified by like the natural love and fear, which is innate to every Jew, which he talked about in chapters 18 through 25 in the first part of Tanya, and the intellectual love and fear, which is spurred on through a person's meditation. And said that, and he's going to talk about this further at great length as when we get to right now, maintaining that why is it that you need love and fear when you're doing mitzvahs is in order to get your mitzvahs to fly, to get them out of this world and get them elevated so that they become included and incorporated into the infiniteness of Hashem, depending on where it is that you're, or how it is that you're conveying this learning, or this mitzvah. If it's an intellectual love and fear, so then it rises to the world of creation, Bria, and if it's an expression of the natural love and fear, so that it rises to the world of formation, to the world of Yetzirah. So now we're going to continue with Ach. As soon as I find the page again, since it flipped up. Okay. Ach tarasin va'avadasin nechlalus mamish b'yid sfirois. She'en elokus va'arein se baruch hu misyachet behem. It says, so when a person learns, in the mitzvahs that you do, where is it coming from? What is it? It's the will of Hashem. It's what Hashem wants us to do. It's the reason you have brachos for the Jews are called beginning, and for the Torah, which is called the beginning, which is why the whole creation is here. The world was created for Jews to do Torah and mitzvahs. So when a Jew does Torah and mitzvahs, we're accomplishing what Hashem wants and the whole reason why the world was created. If that be the case then, so then it makes sense to say that our accomplishments are fulfilling the highest level possible levels of divine will. And therefore what happens is, depending on how much a person can propel those mitzvahs through his fear and love, whether they be natural or intellectual, unites the Torah and the mitzvahs that this person has learned and done back and incorporates it. The word in Hebrew, he's kalalus, means that it becomes part and parcel of. When you have a corporation, the whole idea of a corporation in America is that there are no individuals. There's no individual as an entity. If you're suing a corporation, for example, there's no one person who is responsible for it. It is the corporation as in the sum of its total parts. And the individual loses his identity and just is part of the corporation. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking now of incorporating our mitzvahs in the Torah that we're doing, is that it becomes now part and parcel of the infiniteness of Hashem. Absolutely. As he said way back in chapter 5, that there is no way to describe, physically give an example of the unity which exists when a person learns Torah, and how they are united with, how that Torah is now united with Hashem. Mm-hmm. Okay, the best example we can give is a sun ray before it's been emitted from the sun. That's the best example that we have, which comes out, came up before, it'll come up later. Okay, the sun ray before it comes out of the sun is totally part of the sun. It's not a separate entity. It will be, eventually. This is working the opposite. This was something separate, which is now incorporated and included and part of the infiniteness of Hashem. Indeed, the person now is losing their uniqueness and an individuality, you might say, when they are performing the Torah and learning mitzvahs with love and fear of Hashem. They're becoming part and parcel of Hashem. You know, you talk about a holy person, for example. What is it that makes a person holy? How do we know that this person, well, we never really know if the person's holy. That for sure, we don't know. But we see people and we identify them as being holy is because their actions are not for themselves, but for Hashem. Their whole being is expressing Hashem. That's what we refer to as a holy person.
Mm-hmm.
He qualifies it again through the ten spheres, becomes totally and completely united with Hashem in the ten spheres creation through the fear and love, which is intellectual, or in the ten spheres of formation through the fear and love, which is natural. And enclosed within the ten spheres of both the formation and action are the ten spheres of Atzilus. And he said this way back in chapter 6. So you're going to ask, we're talking about these different worlds. And where are these different worlds? It'd be the same thing as you say, where's Hashem? And you point to the sky. That's true, but it's not correct.
Right.
Because Hashem is everything.
It just is.
So where is the, when we're talking about these different worlds, these different levels of consciousness, the world of the spiritual world of action and the spiritual world, the world of formation and creation and emanation, where are they? It says they're within the thing, within our world.
Within the thing itself.
They're the composition. We can give the example of, if you take a physical object and you look really, really closely at it, what you'll see is molecules.
Yeah.
And if you look at the molecules really closely, you'll see atoms.
Right.
And if you look at the atoms really closely, you'll see subatomic particles. And if you look at the subatomic particles really closely, so you'll see quarks. And if you look at the quarks really closely, so these little string pods, these little energy pods. Okay, so if you take a step back now, as we're looking at the table, so where are the energy pods? They're the table.
They're still there, right?
They are the table.
Right.
Not that they're in the table.
They're the table.
They are the table. And the molecules, they are the table.
Right.
You just have to take a step back further from the energy pods. And the table's right here.
Right.
So when we talk about where is the world of formation and creation and emanation, they're right here. If we could peel off the top layer of three dimension, so you'd see a spiritual dimension of the world of action. And if you'd peel something down and go deeper into it, you would see the action, the level of formation and then creation and then Atzilus. So enclosed within everything is this godliness. This whole creation process is what comprises our physical world. And so what we're doing is we're not doing anything really unique. What we're doing when we do a mitzvah, for example, and we're reuniting it, this physical object, because the vast majority of mitzvahs we talked about before are done with physical objects. You need to have a physical thing. Mm. Is you're incorporating it back to where it came from, which is really, you could say it's right here as far as that goes, because when you put on tefillin, you did the mitzvah of tefillin, and you did the mitzvah of tefillin with a burning, passionate love, which is motivated through meditation, your tefillin didn't disappear when you put them on and like fly off to the world of creation.
Uh-huh.
Someplace, oh, where did my tefillin go? Oh, there's another pair. I got to get another pair now. Sorry. Whoops. This is getting expensive. Every time I put them on,
lose them that way.
They fly off, fly right off to Atzilus.
Yeah,
you know, there goes another. No, they don't, because creation is right here.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you're doing now is you're. Don't you have a reading tone? You're elevating it to the world of Atzilus. You're elevating it to the world of creation. You're bringing about a revelation in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you looked at the tefillin that you put on this morning, and you put them on with a love and a fear. Do you see that they're in the world of Atzilus or creation or formation? No, you didn't see it.
Not a chance.
Okay, but that doesn't matter, because in Judaism, Just because there's a revelation that you didn't see doesn't mean that there wasn't a revelation.
Right. Doesn't mean
the revelation is still there.
Right.
Okay. And what's in the Yud Sefiras of Atzilus? The Yud Sefiras of Atzilus mean Yucheres v'Tachlin b'Maitzan Yitzel Baruch Hu. The 10 spheres are described in Pasach Eliyahu, which is part of the Zohar, which we say every Friday afternoon, as 10 Tikkunin de Levushin Bey, that are 10 adornments of Hashem. When a person puts on a piece of jewelry, okay, a lady puts on a piece of jewelry, why is she putting on the piece of jewelry? Is to make her look nice.
To enhance her beauty.
Yeah, make her look nice. It doesn't, it's not, when the woman is wearing the jewelry, it's not adding anything that really wasn't there before.
Correct.
Okay, if you put a diamond necklace around a pig, it's still going to look like a pig.
Pig with a sparkly.
Yeah, okay. So, the purpose of the jewelry is to bring out and enhance what's already there. So there's these 10 pieces of jewelry, you might say, that Hashem puts on. And they're called the 10 spheres of Atzilus. The 10 spheres of emanation. And Hashem is totally and completely united with them. So you look at them and you see infinite wisdom and infinite kindness and infinite severity, etc. Excuse me. And we say that Hashem, with the world of Atzilus, is totally united. Not only united, we say is one. Iyu v'chayehu chad, iyu v'garmehu chad. Hashem is one with the sphere, for all kinds of purposes, we're going to talk about it now, with the spheres of Atzilus. Because each one is an expression of infiniteness. True infiniteness, but specific to its own sphere. Like it's truly infinite wisdom and truly infinite understanding and truly infinite kindness, etc. And where is that? Well, it happens to be right here too. It's that next layer down. Which, what happens when a person is elevating his actions and his learning to out of the physical world, as soon as we get out of three dimensions, we get it up there. So what happens is the whole process of spirituality is all totally united with the infiniteness of Hashem through this whole process. So that even though a person only did this mitzvah or learned this Torah with a natural love of Hashem, he's Jewish, he likes learning, they're Jewish, they like doing the mitzvah. Okay, like sitting in the sukkah, for example. People like sitting in a sukkah, especially when it's 45 degrees and raining. Yes.
Perfect. Yes. Yes.
So, but for generally, people like sitting in the sukkah. You get nice weather. People really enjoy. They sit in the sukkah and they talk and they schmooze and they eat it becomes vitacious.
It's a lot of fun.
People enjoy it, and it's not they're not thinking so much. I'm really digging on the godliness here. Yeah. This becomes a physical pleasure. So when a person is doing that, that's a natural love and fear for the mitzvah. So that automatically, as soon as that person is doing that, so that whole mitzvah now is elevated to the world of formation. And what happens now, since we've already taken it out of three dimensions by our action of doing it with a love and fear of Hashem, so it automatically becomes unified with the 10 spheres of emanation, and which are totally completely united with the infiniteness of Hashem. So the sukkah that we're sitting in and enjoying just naturally is now totally and completely united with the infiniteness of Hashem. Then he says, but, there's always the but, Masha Enkin and Hashamos. What about us ourselves? Or we ourselves?
Yes.
What happens to us when we're doing these mitzvahs? The thing I'm using is incorporated with the infiniteness of Hashem. Totally and completely. What about me? I still remain me. I still have my own entity. And even spiritually speaking, that's the interesting thing about a neshama. Neshamas generally, souls are generally manifest a product of the world of Bria, of creation. If you say generally, what's in all the different realms? So in the world of emanation, so it's the attributes of Hashem, the divine attributes.
Right.
The world of creation, the world of Bria, so that's the neshamas, the souls. The world of formation, so those are the angels. there are angels in creation, there's souls in formation, everything's in its Atzilus, but generally that's what we're going to say that the breakup is. Mm-hmm. So in the world, what is the world of creation? How do we describe the world of creation? You think the name is misleading. Because when we think creation, we're thinking of a created entity which says, hell, here I is. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, yeah, kind of, sort of, except...
Not at all.
It doesn't... Yeah, not at all. Except it doesn't have a separate existence.
Right.
What's a neshama? If you could draw a picture, I've said this a zillion times, if you could draw a picture of a neshama, it would look exactly like Hashem. Mm. But in the world of creation, it has a definition.
Right.
This is your neshama, and this is your neshama.
Right.
And your neshama is not your neshama, and your neshama is not my neshama. They're, each one of them looks like Hashem, but they all, each one has its own individualism.
Right, identity.
It has its identity. It has a name to it. You can say, this is yours. So what happens now when I do a mitzvah, when you do a mitzvah? What happens to the neshama? That... It's still maintaining its own entity. If it's maintaining, once you say I put on tefillin, so the tefillin, they're not saying anything. They're just getting put up. They're put on. For all intents and purposes, they're an inanimate object.
Right.
And so, since there's no objection over there, they get incorporated in the infiniteness of Hashem.
Right.
What happens would it be that if a person would be incorporated into the infiniteness of Hashem, you're talking Nadav and Avihu.
Uh-huh. No I.
You have no I at that point anymore.
Yeah,
once you say the word I, though, it says, well, I'm not Hashem.
Right.
So what's happening with them? So the Alter Rebbe says, Masha'enken Hashem is enken echalas belakusi yid sfirois. They are not incorporated in the 10 spheros.
Right.
They're kind of standing off to the side. Okay? There's not a whole lot that I've come across and describing what's referred to in the Kabbalah as hechalos, mm-hmm. the chambers. Mm-hmm. But you have this sphere. I mean, if we could give a grub analogy, which I don't like giving grub analogies, because then I have to say, but it's not like that at all.
Yeah, and we talked about that, but don't
I've been saying a zillion times.
Yeah.
Don't think of Oris and Kalim as the light and the vessels as pots full of water.
Right.
Okay, so giving that example that I told you, don't think about it, so the hechel would be like the handle.
Good deal.
Okay. It's not exactly, but don't think about it in that term at all, even though I just gave that a definition.
Right.
It's the, you have the sphere, and the sphere is an expression of godliness. Mm. How that sphere relates to anything else is referred to as the Hechel, which the word chamber really throws off. Chamber is not a very good translation of the word Hechel, but it's the only word I know for it. It's the only translation that I know.
Yeah.
It's the only one I've never seen anything to describe it other way.
Anyway.
You know, the word Keli, okay, which is translated as vessel, so there we have a translation in the Mishnah that says that the translation of the word Keli is anything that has a use. So that really broadens the spectrum and takes it really way out of pots and pans.
Yeah.
A hechel is a chamber. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way I've ever seen it described in the Talmud, as being a chamber, which is a room which is a part of a house. Okay, but when we're talking about the hechelos in Kabbalistic terms, so the way in which this sphere of influence, this level of godliness, which is... is basically broken into three parts.
Mm-hmm.
There is the sphere itself, which is an expression of what it's trying to express. Let's say, for example, kindness.
Yeah.
There is what's referred to as the inner part of the sphere, which relates to the godliness that's coming into it, enlivening it. And then there's the hechel, which you call the external part, which relates to that which it has to relate to. Okay, let's put that into physical terminology. If you're using the example of kindness, okay, I'm going to need energy if I'm going to do an act of kindness.
Mm.
So the energy required would be the inner aspect of the sphere of kindness. The energy required to do that. The actual act would be the sphere itself of kindness. That is kindness, the giving of the thing to. And then the actual being able to give it to the recipient would be like the heichel. So you have like the act of charity. I need, it takes energy for me to be able to give charity. I have to go make money. I have to put the money in my pocket. Then there's the act of giving charity, which is taking the money out of my pocket. And then there's the recipient of it, which is when I put the money, the coin, whatever, into the person's hand.
Right.
So me putting the coin into the hand is the external action, the most external aspect of that aspect, that kindness.
That's halachos.
That's the heichala, yes.
Heichal.
Okay, so that's the idea of the heichal. It's the external expression.
The
person now, when they're doing the mitzvah, and they're doing it as an expression of love and fear of Hashem, they still are there. They're still saying, I am, and I did. Did they accomplish nothing in their own persona? For sure they did. And where are they located? They're now the recipient, you might say. They're on the outside part of that sphere, whichever one it happens to be included in the world of creation, the world of formation. And what are they doing? What happens now? And you're not going to see this till, you know, v'nenen meziv ha'shchina. And that's what it means when it says when a soul passes out of the body and goes to Gan Eden. What is it doing? It's returning back to this heichal, this external expression of the world, and there it derives benefit from what's called, quote-unquote, the ray of the divine presence, which what's the ray of the divine presence that the neshama is deriving benefit from in what we call the Garden of Eden while waiting for Mashiach to come and resurrect all the dead, is the godliness that that person intensified and revealed in the course of their lifetime through the mitzvahs that they did. So that they're still, the soul, even in Gan Eden, maintains its separate identity. It's still Joe's soul. And it doesn't lose itself entirely into godliness. It doesn't become totally and completely incorporated into godliness such that it doesn't have its own entity. It has its own entity. But what is it doing after it's divested itself of three dimensions is participating now in the revelation that it couldn't see while it was in this world. That's what we mean when we say schar mitzvah mitzvah, he's going to say right now. The reward of the mitzvah is the mitzvah. What's a mitzvah? Mitzvah is a connection to Hashem. The reward of the of connecting yourself to Hashem is being connected to Hashem. And we don't see that until
we're connected.
We divest ourselves of our three-dimensional bodies, which I'm not suggesting you do that anytime soon.
He
just says right now, as I just said before, that he's united with the infiniteness of Hashem, depending on whatever level it was. What happens? Okay, yesterday I put on tefillin out of a natural love of Hashem. The first day after the Yom Tov, I haven't put on tefillin in 9 days. It says about Levi Yitzchak Bardichev that the day after Yom Tov, he couldn't put on tefillin. He was so excited that his Talmidim had to hold him down and put his tefillin on for him. He would just be so overcome by the fact that now he gets to put on tefillin for the first time in 8-9 days. Okay, that's that's what happens with you, right? Yes.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay, so let's say yesterday I didn't put on tefillin for 9 days, and yesterday I put on tefillin. I say, hey, I haven't put on tefillin in now 9 days. Wow. Okay, and that's an expression of a natural love and fear of Hashem. Today already, so since I've already gotten over everything I had to do, the running around and getting, you know, putting all the sukkah and the schach and the et cetera away, and I've, you know, so today, so now I'm back in the swing. So today I got a chance. I'm going to meditate. And I'm going to think about the greatness of Hashem, and with the whole idea of Shivat Maya Halal Alev, the whole purpose of putting on tefillin is that a brain controls the heart, and thinking about Hashem and the greatness of Hashem, I put on the tefillin, and today I did the mitzvah with an intellectual love and fear.
Okay, so yesterday I did it. This is this is suppositional totally. Yesterday I did it with a natural love and fear. Today I did it with an intellectual love and fear. So now this person who did it in this way, I'm changing the paradigm over here. Now the person who did it this way, sometimes like this, sometimes like that, sometimes you just put them on. What's he getting in the world to come? He's going to go, oh, did you put on tefillin every day of your life? Yeah, I put on tefillin every day of my life. I was supposed to put on tefillin. Check. You get one check. Okay, that's it. So he did the mitzvah. That's why the Rebbe said that it's so important that a person who never put on tefillin before should at least one time in their life, because now they're at a whole different thing. Now they are a person who put on tefillin in their lifetime. Okay, it's a whole set. There's a quantum leap between a person who puts on tefillin once and a person who never put on tefillin. You don't have that leap from 1 to 2 or 3 to 5 or 10,395 to 10,396. It's from 0 to 1. That's where the quantum leap is. It's a whole different person. This is a whole different person because he put on tefillin one time. Because when he goes to heaven after Shemayim, after 120 years, they're going to say, you ever put on tefillin? Yeah, I put on tefillin once. Check. Did you put on tefillin? 10,395 times. Check.
Yeah.
Okay, so now this person put on tefillin 10,395 times.
Same number two pencil, too.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes he did it out of natural love and fear. Sometimes he was rushed. He wasn't thinking. Sometimes but he did it. And sometimes he did it intellectual love and fear. So what kind of Gan Eden is this guy getting for his natural love and for all these different types of love and fear of Hashem? And the answer is very simple. All of them. Because when a person does something that causes a revelation of Hashem, so now he's a participant in the natural love and fear. Wait a minute. If a person does it just because, not for any ulterior motive, but he just does it, so we say that his Gan Eden is in the Gan Eden in the world of Asiya, in the world of action. If he did it out of a natural love of Hashem, so his Gan Eden is in the world of formation. If he did an intellectual love of Hashem, so now his Gan Eden is in the world of creation. So which Gan Eden is he in? And the answer is yes.
Yes.
Because it's a revelation of Hashem. Who says that he can't be participating in all these different levels of revelation of Hashem simultaneously? There's nothing that says you have to be here to get this revelation and over here to get this revelation. That only happens in a three-dimensional world,
right.
Okay, as soon as you get out of any type of ideas of place, Gan Eden is not a place.
Right.
It's a state of consciousness.
Right.
And we could have the soul can experience different levels of consciousness simultaneously.
Sure.
So the answer to the question is all of them. Okay. What would be the best thing is if you did every mitzvah the best way you possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
But if Hashem has only had one level for us to get to, it'd be one. You know, we'd be talking nirvana, not Gan Eden.
Right.
Okay, so everybody has their own personal Gan Eden. Your Gan Eden is tailor-made just for you. Okay, so then, we continue. Ve'olam Atzilus, written two dots in the Hebrew.
Looking for a better tailor.
Yeah, Ve'olam Atzilus, shehu l'mayla mahasechel v'hasaga v'havana l'sechel nivra. When you're talking about the world of Atzilus, so Atzilus is really beyond a human being's comprehension. We have no idea of it. And this, when he writes here, the world of Atzilus, is probably one of the few times in the Tanya, I'm just looking at before, one of the few times in the Tanya that the word Atzilus is actually written out fully.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, under regular circumstances, when the Alter Rebbe was writing the Tanya, and he would write the word, to write the word Atzilus, he'd write Aleph, Tzadik, Yud, and he couldn't write anymore.
Yeah.
He was just so overcome just by thinking about, I'm now thinking about Atzilus. When he would write the word Atzilus, he'd start thinking about what Atzilus is and just become totally awestruck. So usually you get Aleph, Tzadik, Yud, slash. Okay, and why is it that here he was able to write it? None of the commentaries talked about it, but it's here. This is because he's saying it's beyond our comprehension. So maybe at this point he just said, I'm not going to be able to understand what I'm talking about anyway. So was able to write the whole thing over here.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond our comprehension. We haven't got a clue what it is. And we don't even really understand why it is that we don't understand what it is. Because when you start talking about godliness, then concepts sort of tend to, the whole idea of what's a concept? A concept is an idea which can be thought about from beginning to end.
Yeah.
When you're talking about Hashem, Hashem's not an idea.
Right.
You can't think about Hashem's beginning because there is no beginning. You can't think about Hashem's end because there is no end. And the world of Atzilus is this infiniteness of Hashem in user-friendly form, but it's still infinite, infinite wisdom. It has no beginning, it has no end. So as soon as you start taking in things and saying that they have no beginning, no end, so I kind of get lost. Because I've never seen anything that was infinite. Okay, I've never experienced infinite. I'm never going to experience infinite, not in this lifetime.
Mm.
So the whole concept of Atzilus is beyond our comprehension. Because, comparably speaking, the world of emanation, the world of Atzilus, is so far removed from the world of creation because it is united with the essence of Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
It is an expression of the infiniteness of Hashem. Whereas what's creation? Creation is, now we said before, but there's entities that recognize themselves as their own existence.
Right.
For something to say I, and something to say only Hashem, is incomparable one to the other.
Right.
And again, it's going to be a very difficult thing to comprehend, because I can't stop saying I. Okay, well, to say I understand the world of Atzilus, you don't, because as soon as you said the word I, you already said you don't understand the world. That already means you don't understand the world of emanation. So, and we don't even understand why that is. Because I can understand anything if I think about it hard enough. So, you know, jet propulsion, that wasn't so difficult. You know, topographical geography, that was a piece of cake. You know, subatomic particle theory, you know, I could do that, you know. But to start thinking about why I can't think about Atzilus, I can describe Atzilus. You have all these great little books that have like pictures of spheres and stuff like that.
Mm.
Okay. So, but it's not a concept. And that's what the problem is because when we're talking about a something, Atzilus is a something, right? And the answer is, well, it's not really a something.
No.
And that's what Bria is, a something. The world of creation is a something.
Mm.
Okay, so I can relate to that, and I can describe it, and sort of like put it into perspective.
Mm.
But Atzilus is a nothing. And I don't know what nothing is. It's a nothing only as far as my perception of what it is.
I know what it's not.
It's not.
Something.
It's not something. Right, thank you very much.
No charge.
Yes. Okay. And that's because, why is that? It's because it's an extension of the infinite of Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
It never had an entity of its own. It's God's kindness.
Yeah.
The emphasis there being on, not the kindness, but the God's.
But doesn't the fact that that it has a title create some...
That's what confuses us.
Some level of identity.
That's what confuses us.
Yeah.
But it's not separate and distinct from the infinite of Hashem. Like the facets of a diamond define what the diamond is, but the facet is not something different than the diamond. It's
right.
It is the diamond.
Right, right, right. It gives it, it causes it.
Right, the whole sparkle
gives
and the whole determination
to have
and
luster.
The whole worth of the diamond
right.
is depends on its,
right.
its facets.
Right, right.
Okay. Okay, but the facet is not something you stuck on it.
No. It
is the diamond. So the world of Atzilus is Hashem. It's, we said before, it's a piece of jewelry. It's a tachshit. It's an adornment. It's the way in which Hashem expresses himself.
Maybe this analogy doesn't work. Analogies are always poor, but a diamond in the raw has no ability to give off luster because it has no, there are no,
there's no proper facets,
no
correct.
Proper facets,
right?
So there's no def, there's no definition given to it,
right?
So perhaps all we can say is that Atzilus has definition.
You want to call the infiniteness of Hashem like a raw diamond?
No, not a chance.
Good, I'm glad.
Not a chance.
I'm very glad.
No, we'll not go there. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, all right. No, I'm done.
Yeah, okay.
Stick me with the fork.
Because now what happens to the... because what happens in the world of creation, Kisham Yardel Lahar Bevekinis Tzimtzum, the world of Atzilus, between emanation and creation is a quantum jump. There has to be. There's quantum jumps between every world.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, you're talking about a realm that is an expression of the infiniteness of Hashem. There's a quantum leap, and now you have a world which has definition. Things have a possibility of existence. Things identify themselves as themselves. Because the godliness has come down, has descended through the contraction process. In order that our intellect should be able to receive from them this intellect of Hashem, to know Hashem and to understand and to comprehend some comprehensible concept in the infiniteness of Hashem, each one according to his own intellect and his own abilities. That when we're... Why is it that Hashem went through this whole process? It's very simple. The Zohar answers that very, very simple. You know, it talks about in Perkei Avos, Hashem could have just said, let there be a creation. You have to go through the whole step process with light and space and firmaments and these whole things. Just, you know, Hashem should have just, Hashem could have even just made it. We'd have to talk about it. Just, okay,
done.
Here's creation, done. In less than the blink of an eye. No, there has to be this whole process. And the Zohar says, begained in Ishtu Moedin Bey. In order, why did Hashem go through a whole process in order that we'd be able to talk about it? If there wouldn't be a process in the creation, we wouldn't be able to sit here and talk about, well, how did the world come about? It would be just, it would be indescribable because suddenly we just sort of appeared. And where do we come from? There's no process.
Right.
There's nothing what to talk about.
It's like, a ladder back.
Like this, we get to talk about how the process works in our coming into existence. And we get to hypothesize and to theorize how the infiniteness of Hashem relates to us.
Right.
In other words, we can relate to God because Hashem created the world this way. Could Hashem created the world a different way?
Sure.
And infinite different possibilities of how Hashem could have created the world. But Hashem chose to create it this way. What do we say? If Hashem would have created it a different way, we would be analyzing why did Hashem create it that way. Okay, but Hashem didn't create it that way. Hashem created it this way, and we're left to analyze why did Hashem create it this way. And we say, in order to know Hashem, that we should be able to sit and talk about the creation process.
Yeah.
That now becomes a comprehensible entity, that Hashem created a world, made a creation. That it should be able to be relatable by the intellect of each creature, Shehem Bali Gvul V'Tachlis, that every person happens to have ultimate limits. I've yet to meet an infinite person. Shelo Yisbatel B'Metzius, so that they shouldn't become nullified in their existence. V'lo Yibegeder Nivroim Klal, because what would happen otherwise is if there was no limitations, then we wouldn't be limited either. And we wouldn't exist a separate entity. We wouldn't be creations.
Right.
We would go back to our source once we came. It would be the Nut of Interview story all over again.
One.
Yes. Exactly. It would be one energy. And that's all there would be.
Right.
It's just one energy, and you wouldn't be able to have.
There's no I.
There's no I, and there's no anything else either.
Right.
So Hashem now, wanting there to be, ultimately, this existence of a physical world in which people could do mitzvahs had to do or set it up such that there is this process So that not only is it that the godliness comes down, but more important, we get to elevate the godliness back to where it came from. And when it's not expected of us to elevate it to the world of Atzilus or higher, we're not expecting things to disappear. That's not what's expected of us. What's expected of us is to bring it back up the ladder, you might say. Take it back, reverse the chain reaction.
Right.
So that it's climbing that ladder and going back up to whence it came, and even higher, because now we've used it for the purpose of serving Hashem's will.
Mm.
Should we stop here? It's after 10 o'clock.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. You have one more sentence in the... No, I'm talking about in the English. There's no paragraph there either in the English, so but I think there's a dot. So we're two lines from the bottom of the page is where we left off on page 191. Okay, to be continued.